Who are you?
Raul Wybera.
Jim Arrowwood.
J.P. Harvey.
What do you want?
To talk about the show Crusade with friends and fans.
Where are you going?
All the way through Crusade and then to the novels.
Who do you serve and who do you trust?
Babylon 5 fans everywhere.
This is still the Babylon Project podcast.
The year is 2020. The place, the Babylon Project podcast.
Everybody, welcome to our next exciting episode of the Babylon Project X-File. This is your host, Raul Wybera, and I am joined, as always, by my really good friends, Jim Arrowwood and J.P. Harvey. Well, guys, is the truth out there?
Trust no one.
Oh, gosh.
No, I say it's out there.
Wow. Okay, that was definitely a little off the beaten track intro, I'm sure, for those who may not have seen this episode.
However, it is appropriate.
Yep, it is all completely appropriate. You know what? I'm not even going to do the normal banter because I know the conversation as we go through is going to go nuts so at points. So, Jim, dive us straight into your summary.
Very well.
Archive. Access. Initiated.
In this X-Files parody, the crew of the Excalibur encounters two aliens that are investigating the possibility that humans are invading their planet. As it turns out, the supposed invasion is a conspiracy perpetrated by the Illuminati of the alien government, planting false information to distract the population from reality. Well, there it is. Say that fast three times.
There it is.
Oh, gosh. That is probably the best summary you've ever done. Just out of the sheer unadulterated orneriness.
Yep.
Oh, my.
I thought I'd use a lot of $10 words in that one.
Yeah. You know, speaking of Illuminati, have you ever read the Illuminati trilogy?
No, I never have.
You ought to someday just... obviously, the X-File connection, but boy, that book was definitely written by people on an acid trip.
Oh, well, maybe it's something I need to avoid.
Well, it is classic sci-fi.
Nah.
Anyway, you know, one thing we did kind of skip going in straight into the summary. JP, any details on the production information on this episode?
Yeah, heck yeah. I'm ready. I have the usual info. Not as weird or exciting as maybe some of the last ones. But as we see here, it was episode 12 in terms of how it was aired. Produced as episode 104, so the fourth episode produced. It was not in the original first 10 lineup that JMS had envisioned. It looks like he intended it to air as number 12, so we're seeing it when he wanted it to go in order.
Hey, I think that's the only episode of the entire run that aired where it belonged.
Yeah. He wrote it, and it was directed by a fellow named Jerry Apoian, I guess is how you say his name. A-P-O-I-A-N, Jerry Apoian. That is the only episode he directed in this series. And for those that care when stuff aired, because it does give a little context to some of the things we might see on any given episode, this one actually aired on the 25th of August, 1999.
Character files opened.
So, under guest starring, we have Josh Clark as Kendar, cigarette-smoking man. He was also in Movements of Fire and Shadow.
Ah.
Okay. I hope I say this correctly. Francesi Robertson as Lissa Scully, who also appeared in Stargate SG-1, V, and a variety of other genre-related shows.
Yeah, Supergirl most recently, if you watched that show. But
I gave up on that years ago. So
it's give upable.
Yeah. And then we had Harry Van Gorkin as Durkani Mulder. And that rounds out the guest starring. And under co-starring, we have Robert Casso as Robert Carno, or excuse me, Robert Casso as Robert Connor. We have Sandra Gonzalez as Maintenance Number 2. Eric Whitmore as Security Number 1, who also appeared on Star Trek Voyager and Space Above and Beyond. And finally, we had Camila Griggs as Security Number 2, who also appeared on Alien Nation.
Okay.
So, there is the guest cast.
Yeah. And Josh Clark, if I remember when we talked about it before, he had a ton of other genre cred that we don't need to go into again, I thought.
Yeah.
Yes. I know a lot of Star Trek. I remember mostly from Star Trek.
Yeah, probably. Everybody's been on Star Trek.
Yeah, but the really important Star Trek people have been on Babylon 5.
Ah.
Actually, and I know I'm picking on Star Trek just a little bit, but there is a nice little poke at Star Trek a little later in this, actually at the end of this episode.
Oh, okay.
Initiating plot analysis.
Anyway, we're in a transport tube with something smelling, apparently, between decks 18 and 14.
Who knows what it can be?
It's
probably a practical joke from the Minbari builders.
Well, it's good to know that distress signals trump unpleasant smells.
Could this be wafting up from Gray 17?
I think they're a few light years from there. And as Spock pointed out to Chekhov, odors do not propagate through the vacuum of space.
Oh, no, but small life pods do.
Yes, they do.
Which gives us a first contact situation.
You guys like that life pod?
You know, that and then the way the stairs came out and, you know, at first I was, it's like, what in the world that they've got? They've got more experience than that kind of armed rush in. And then I thought, wait, is it just me or is this day the earth stood still?
I don't know. Klaatu Barada Nikto.
Yeah, exactly. What? Exactly.
Or a little lost in space.
Yeah. You know, and it kind of fits. It kind of fits some of the thinking of both in a way.
Yeah. Yeah, the story that the occupants of that pod tell suggests that they were a little lost in space.
Yeah, you see a couple of circa 1990s suits strolling down out of the pod, and one of the suited aliens is very obviously a very small red-headed or red tentacled girl alien.
Who could this be?
It didn't take very long to get an idea of where this was going. And his the first words out of the guy's mouth in English, mind you, is that they're taking proof. And we very quickly find out that his name is Dukhani.
Yes.
Just don't slip and say Dukhovny, right?
Right.
let's go ahead and this, folks. This will tell you the episode we're in for, and I'm going to say in advance, forgive all the clips, but it was just irresistible.
Everyone, just back away. Put your guns down.
We can't do that.
You in charge here?
I'm the captain.
Good. I want my ship recharged and clear to leave.
We can do that.
I don't want him.
That we can't do.
Fine. Well, I'll take somebody else, but one of you is going with me.
Why? Why are you doing this? We just saved your life.
Don't give me that! You're gonna make me disappear like everyone else. I'm going back, and this time I'm taking proof.
What proof?
Fine. That's just a strain. I'm not used to contact with alien minds.
Did you have a chance to look around while you were in there?
Negative. Projection is allowed under defense protocol, but alien or human, unauthorized scans are not permitted.
I wouldn't expect you to do a full scan, just a sense of the room, so to speak.
Showing that we can obey the new regs is all that stands between us and the creation of a new Psi-Corps. I'm not going to be the one to mess that up. All I got were emotions. They're confused, desperate, determined, and deeply frightened.
Of what?
Us.
So the truth is out there.
Way out there. way out there. No, I'm going to take this guy. No, you're not. Well, then I'm going to take somebody else.
This is probably one of the less serious episodes of, well, actually, the franchise.
With one exception that I'll call out at the end.
Yep. So okay. Yep. And we've got some new telepath rules, apparently.
Yes. So, yeah. So in that scene, those of you that have seen this might recall that instead of holding a weapon, Matheson put the image of whatever his name is, Dukhani, put an image of a coral snake in his, put an image of a coral snake in his hand, which he promptly dropped on the floor. And so, of course, Gideon jumps right in there and says, "Oh, well, I'm sure you did a great scan. Why don't you tell me what you saw?" And Matheson, as we have learned, is an honorable person. And as far as he's concerned, the new telepath rules are in stone, and he wasn't giving anything. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the contrast to that, what we've learned is that Gideon is not quite as honorable.
Well, he's already said he'll do whatever it takes to get what he needs.
Mm-hmm.
So he's a gambler. You know, he threw the dice to see where they would go, and they didn't come back for him.
Yeah, he's neither honorable in the Sinclair or the Boy Scouty Sheridan way by any stretch.
Yep, it depends on what's in the script.
Actually, in a way, that's actually series true, not just script writing true. He'll deal with the script that's written and to get the results. So we get ourselves the first of a couple of flashbacks.
Yes.
Play that for us. This is not too terribly long of one.
Lisa.
Ducati, is that you? Where are you?
Not far. Are you okay?
I came back to the office.
You shouldn't be there. It's dangerous. They're watching.
I had to check just in case they left anything behind. Durkani, they burnt the files, tore the place apart. There's nothing left except for what we grabbed on the way out. What are we gonna do?
Well, you always said you wanted to go places you've never been. Now's the time.
What are you talking about?
Look, we can't go home, and we can't go to the authorities without the proof. But there's one place we can go where we can find the proof.
Where's that?
Out there. Meet me in half an hour in the usual place. I'll take it from there.
Where are we going to go for the truth?
Out there.
Out there. Yes.
Which I guess is better than Antarctica.
Okay.
Reference to the movie.
One of the movies, at least. And did you notice the kind of the synth sound of the music there at the end? It's definitely not quite so Doctor Who-ish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
there's a lot of little nudges like that in the music track for this. At this point, I'm asking, where's the CSM, or as the X-File people call them, otherwise known as the cigarette smoking man?
Just wait for it. Just wait for it.
We used to call him Cancer Man.
Cancer. Yeah, I remember being called that as well. Yes.
I just called him Cool.
He was pretty cool.
He was. You know, he'd be sitting there in some high official's office, and he'd light up, and there's no smoking in here. He wouldn't say a word. He'd just keep going.
Keep puffing. Yep.
Yep. And there was nobody powerful enough to tell him he couldn't.
Mm-hmm. And I guess they didn't want to go too far with the similarities, and they used something more along the lines of walkie-talkies than cell phones.
Yeah.
I guess they had to keep some differences.
For me, when X-Files was, you know, still new, still coming out, I think it was a Nokia phone that Mulder used, or Mulder and Scully both used.
I had that Nokia.
And, you know, I did too, and in part, not totally, but in part because I thought that was the coolest looking phone. You know, when I saw it on X-Files, it was like, wow, that's neat.
Mm.
Yep. So in this case, we don't get it. It would have been kind of cool if they had used those Nokia phones, those same ones.
I miss my Razor. I really loved my Motorola Razor.
Yes. Small, and you could drive nails with it.
Yep, and you could flip it open and say, "Beam me up, Scotty."
The only Motorola I ever had was that big 2-pound brick.
Oh, bag phone.
It didn't need a bag, but if you wanted a bag because it was heavy enough, and you definitely needed it if you had a second battery.
Yeah, but they didn't have phones. They had walkie talkies. That rang right. Like
that
a phone.
Ringed. Uh-huh.
That was kind of interesting.
Yep. Oh, and we learned something important. For me, it's one of the most important things of the entire series.
And that would be?
There is still no good coffee in space.
Oh.
Or there's no real coffee in space, right?
Unless you're Ivanova.
What would they say? Not bad for synthesize. And then he complained about, or it has lots of caffeine or whatever he said.
Yeah.
Well, you know, It's like they're like the Navy, right? And everybody knows the Navy has coffee that could take the finish off of a baseball bat.
I wonder if it's because they add their own salt to it.
Hey, what's the coffee like in the Air Force?
That's fine.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we're good on the coffee.
Okay. Yeah, the Navy, they use the leftovers to swab the deck with.
A quick detour. You guys know why it's called a cup of Joe, right? you've heard that phrase, right? Coffee,
yeah.
Called a cup of Joe?
Oh, yeah.
Do you know why it's called a cup of Joe?
No, I don't.
So the story goes, that's attributed to Admiral Josephus Daniels' decision to ban hard liquor on ships.
Oh.
And when he did that, the crews took over drinking strong coffee instead. And so in his honor, in air quotes, they referred to it as a cup of Joe.
I did not know that.
I didn't know that.
I can't prove it, but it's a prolific story and legend across the military that Josephus Daniels, Admiral Daniels, was the one that banned liquor. And so coffee became the substitute. And they called it Joe in his name or in his honor.
Interesting. Yeah. Mm.
The truth is out there.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of the truth being out there, you know, Gideon's kind of pointing out some of the obvious here. They dress like us. They speak English. But most importantly, we find out that there has been no record of contact.
Yeah, nothing.
And they're having their little conversation. I keep trying to call them Scully and Mulder because they're so much Dracani and what's her?
Lissa?
Yeah, Lissa.
L-Y-S-S-A?
That was just a downright Mulder-Scully conversation.
Loaded with
and
paranoia.
He believes, and she doubts.
Yeah. He believes and she doubts.
Or she doubted, as we'll learn.
Yeah, because she starts out apologizing for thinking he was some kind of crackpot.
Yep, exactly.
But we get a little bit of explanation, right? A little history.
Yeah. And we have, you know, we have a theory that both governments from both places, Earth and whatever their home world is called, is withholding information and hiding it.
Yeah, apparently some past history.
So, I don't
know. Go ahead and play.
Your people have been visiting my planet for centuries. You've ruined lives, devastated parts of my world, and helped create certain high-placed agencies within the government to conceal those facts. I've dedicated my life to exposing this conspiracy of silence.
No. If this were going on, I'd know about it.
Assuming you're not lying.
And assuming you're not lying either. All right, you've got my interest. I'll tell you what. You say you can prove these allegations? Show me. If you can back this up, I will personally take you back to your world so that we can investigate these charges further. Is that a deal?
For now.
Good. I'll have one of my people go to your life pod. Bring anything you need.
Music is awesome.
It is.
Yeah, it's straight out of... It is straight out of it. So both governments are in this massive conspiracy.
Yes, and the humans have been infiltrating their world for years.
And you know how you know it's true?
How do we know?
Because there's no evidence of it.
Right.
Of course.
We're going straight into Art Bell territory here.
Well, yeah. Art Bell, we go even farther than that pretty soon, but I'll hold that. I'll hold that yes. thought for a little bit.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Oh, and just to keep us reminded about it, there's still that smell.
It's got to be another conspiracy, And my guess would be Galen.
What, not a Mimbari practical? So you've graduated from a Mimbari practical joke.
Well, I've got several theories here. Conspiracy theories, yes. Cue the crickets.
Anyway. Anyway, I keep trying to say Dukani. You got to admit, folks, it's hard keeping the two, not to slip into the other series here, okay?
Duchovny, Dukani.
Mulder, yeah. Their world with these old-fashioned style photographs, their world is about where ours is now.
Well, it would be actually,
except
wouldn't
for
it
the
be
blimp.
1999?
All right, 20 years back.
Right.
So a blimp, even their own version of Roswell.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Except they found golf clubs there.
Right. And
it's either a weapon or a recreational device.
And let's not forget now, the clothing they're wearing is explained. It is conspiratorial. It is the influence of the humans is why they dress the way they do.
Uh-huh.
Right. Forced to jettison their traditional garb or whatever he said.
And language.
Dress like this.
Yes. Conspiratorial clothing even. Wow. And then there's the Big Gripper.
The face of Mars. I'm Earth. I would retake that.
No,
but
no. It's shadowing. It's shadowing.
You're right. It's shadowing.
A trick of light and shadow. Yes. You know, and here's where we go the step beyond Art Bell. Because I have to wonder if they have their own version, the aliens, of Richard C. Hoagland.
Oh, Lord.
Yes. Who discovered the faces on Earth.
Right.
I love the way Gideon plays this, though. You idiot, that's Mount Rushmore. Everybody knows what Mount Rushmore is.
Oh, yeah. Gideon does have a good question there. Where does he fit into all this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, of course, goes back to more flashbacks.
Yes.
And a man with a mask.
Under a mask.
Under a mask.
Yep. And did anyone notice the I'm almost more of a Y taped into the tape on the window.
Yeah, it is a Y.
Yeah, close enough, right?
Yes. Yeah, I was going to say it's close enough to the original office. It's like they reproduced the set almost.
Except I'm not going to go there. No, there it definitely, but it is a Y because I was watching.
Yes,
for
it's
it.
A Y.
So,
and finally, yes, we get Cancer Man minus the SIG. Only, you know, though he seems to use his tentacle. They angle the camera the way he twirls his tentacle is.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, doesn't always have a cigarette in his hand, but he's got that tentacle.
Yeah,
treats it like Cancer Man did the cigarette.
Exactly. So
it was pretty cool.
And he really gets a lot of CSM's mannerisms down too in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but he's just different enough to be a parody.
Yes. Yes. However, there is the one big question that, you know, we're all probably wondering at this point that Gideon asks.
Yep.
Play it for us, sir.
But you still haven't answered one question. Why? What's the goal? You said my people have been interfering with yours. How?
When money for our children's education is cut, we know it's because the outsiders want our people to remain more ignorant, so they can be used and manipulated more easily. When public funding for housing is cut back, it's because they need the money to build more secret underground bases. The crime and poverty rate have increased to keep us off balance. Every facet of life on my world has been affected. This isn't our native style of dressing. This has been pushed upon us by fashion designers working for the government so the aliens feel more at home among us, so they can move more freely. Captain, assuming this is not just some trick to see how much we've got, if you truly don't know that your government is involved, then I plead with you, help us. Come to my world. Your arrival there will give us all the proof we've been waiting for.
All right. Let me take the rest of the night to look this over. I'll have a decision by morning.
Thank you.
Of course, that still really didn't answer the why. What's in it for the Earth Alliance?
Nah, we'll get to that.
Yep.
Or what's not in it for the Earth Alliance.
Right. And it closes with him focusing on a picture of the American flag vault.
Now was that that really seriously yes. looked like a crop square to me?
Yes. It was.
Okay.
It absolutely was. Oh my. And now we get an unknown ship in space calling in English. What are the odds?
Yes, and we get Snark from Matheson.
Do we?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. All the way through this episode, he is really, yep. really snarky in and out all the time.
Him and Gideon both, but it stands out more with Matheson.
Yeah, because he hardly ever gets any lines.
Yes, it actually, you know, that was one of the nice things about this episode. I mean, there were whole swaths where he was hardly even you forgot he was there.
Yeah.
So we at least we get, especially if this was going to be aired 12th, we get the idea that, yeah, there is going to be something done with this character.
Yeah.
But our ship in space, guess who it is?
Oh, yes.
Yep. CSM wanting. Whose name actually is Kindar in this case. I didn't see how that connected with X-Files.
Hmm.
Well, that's like the Scully character. Her name doesn't match Dana Scully or Gillian Anderson. It's just they just used a name. But they did the general character tip of the hat using Mulder, right? Or using Duchovny.
Otherwise, it would have been too old.
You've just uncovered another conspiracy.
Dang it.
Very good, JP. Very good.
Well, he's there to collect them, whether they're Mulder and Scully or Lissa and Duchovny, for execution?
Yeah. Seems a little harsh.
Yes. Go ahead and let's play that clip.
My name is Captain Matthew Gideon of the Starship Excalibur. Identify yourself.
Special Agent Kindar. I believe you have intercepted two of our citizens. We would like you to return them to us at your first convenience.
May I ask why?
Why? To execute them, of course.
Wow.
Of course.
Yeah, what else would we do with them?
Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's not just doing he's really overplaying the CSM character.
Well, of course.
He's got it down well enough that he's able to overplay it well. That's what was fun about it.
Now, as I recall, William Davis is the actor that played that character on X-Files, who was very understated. You know, he stood out in his performance, but not as a huge character. He was always in the shadows. And did you know that he is a non-smoker?
Yes, I did know that.
So here we have just the opposite. We have a very boisterous, self-confident, overconfident, officious person.
Yep. Oh, gosh. Have you ever, I guess, since you mentioned William Davis, did you ever watch Continuum?
Oh, yes.
Okay, yeah, I loved his role in Continuum.
I like him in everything I've ever seen him in.
You know, you're right. I won't argue that at all. Yes. but this parody of him seems really well informed.
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead and play that and I'll explain.
And so I would like to see the prisoners as soon as possible.
I'll have them brought up from the brig so we can talk, but just to talk.
Captain.
I have a slight problem turning them over to you knowing that they're going to be executed.
But surely, Captain, even on your own world, there are some offenses that are punishable by death.
High crimes are usually punishable by death of personality, not physical death. We believe...
But there are some, are there not?
Mutiny, treason, one or two others.
On my world, there are very few crimes that merit the death penalty. One such is to commandeer a spacecraft and take it beyond the limits of our solar system, as these two have done. There are many dangerous races out here, Captain, most of whom are far more advanced than we. The ship that brought me here is one of only a few we've built so far, none of which are capable of entering hyperspace. And without the presence of a jump gate, we are limited to our own small system.
You're at a tactical disadvantage.
Exactly. And until we catch up... As a duly appointed law enforcement officer, it is my responsibility to make sure that no one goes out and attracts the wrong attention.
How can you justify penalizing your citizens for contacting aliens while at the same time denying the existence of any life forms outside your world?
That denial serves a purpose that would take too long to explain. But in this case... You smell something?
Right when we were about to get an answer.
Uh-huh.
But you see what I mean? They've got pretty good ears, if nothing else. They're familiar with the basics of interstellar travel. They've got a good handle on the races out there. They understand the whole idea of jump points and why do I keep trying to say stargates? Jump gates.
Hyperspace.
Yeah.
Jump gates and hyperspace. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so who are these they? I mean, obviously it isn't the entire population.
That'll become clear soon enough.
Okay.
I was going to say the government, some sort of extra or intergovernmental agency. Did we ever actually find that out in the X-Files even?
As I recall, and it has been a very long time, there was a group of very, very powerful people.
The Cabal, basically.
Who, yeah, they were the power behind the power. And
We will call them IPX.
And the only yep. And the only time they would actually step in is if things were going a direction that they didn't like.
Right. So, you know, with everything else I've got my son hooked on, I've never gotten him hooked on X-Files. I'm going to have to correct that.
Well, as long as it's... Well, no, I'm not going to go there. Okay.
Anyway... Gideon comes up with the brilliant idea of letting them meet both groups of aliens. I guess. Was that a single man ship then?
Got me.
I don't think they really tell us.
No, they don't.
We don't know.
But they're
going to assume not, because he came saying, I'm here to get these guys, right?
Right. And CSM tells them in their own language, basically, what's going on is going to become clear soon enough. Basically, they let him go to find out how much he knew is his explanation.
Yeah.
But well, basically, he's goading him.
Yeah.
You were about to say something, sir.
Well, I was going to say, you know, if nothing else, Gideon's going to put them all together for their entertainment value.
Right. Right. And we get our entertainment out of it. The goading works. Don't ask me why, but CSM has a gun on him. And now we have a hostage situation.
Another hostage situation.
Another hostage situation.
The second, you know, was one. Mulder, was
Mulder kidnapping people regularly in X-Files?
I don't think he ever did.
No. Yeah.
That, he was always too busy getting his butt kicked.
Yeah, he was usually the one. He was usually the one on the other side, on the business side of the gun.
Yeah. So.
Well, they come up with the brilliant idea to hide in a transport tube. And I like his bright side. At least if we die, he's dying with us.
Yeah.
Always look on the bright
side. Okay.
Now, one thing I did notice. Gideon seemed a little, you know, and JP, you kind of pointed it out already. There was a definite increased level of snark on the Excalibur crew. Well,
yeah.
Gideon Matheson, that's pretty much the only crew we saw.
And for Gideon, it was, it made him less likable. It wasn't as clever, I didn't think, as when Matheson got snarky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gideon almost seemed mean, but when nobody reacted to the apparent meanness, it was clear this was more some sort of just snarky banter.
Yeah, it was his rugged good looks that caused it.
Let's go ahead and it's come up a couple of times. I think you've got a clip that'll show it.
We've got teams moving up every day. We'll find them soon enough, sir.
Finding them is less of an issue than what we do once we find them.
Is their life pod recharged?
Almost. Captain, are you sure you want to give in to their demands?
This isn't our fight, Lieutenant. We got dragged into the middle of this mess. It's got nothing to do with us. As far as I'm concerned, you can wall up the lot of them. They can fight it out to their heart's content.
Any word on the landing bay scanners?
We've gone over them three times, Captain. They're in perfect working order.
Then how did Kendar smuggle a weapon past them?
I don't know. The scanners are set to pick up any known kind of weapon. Slug throwers, energy weapon, plasma gun.
Then this must be some new kind of weapon, something we haven't seen before.
Oh, these aliens are less advanced than we are. It's doubtful they could come up with a more advanced weapon.
Doesn't make sense.
There's a lot here that doesn't make sense. But before this is over, it will make sense, or I will have someone's hide hanging on my office wall.
We've located the intruder, sir. They're on a level 14th tube.
All right, get a tactical team up there in one of the bullet cars. We'll go in through the nearest work shaft and catch them in the middle and make sure we can contain the situation this time.
Aye, aye, sir.
Oh. Yeah, it's JP's right. It's almost out of character snark for him.
Yeah.
Not totally awful, but just he came across as almost mean, like I was saying, where Matheson, every time he got snarky, it made me grin.
Yeah. Well, let's face it. These guys are still searching their character. They're still building what their character is. And as you say, this was the fourth episode shot.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yep.
I would expect some of that awkwardness.
You know, and not only that, this episode is far enough out of character that it might not have been entirely accidental. I mean, it served the plot.
Oh, that's true.
Anyway, they find the source of the smell.
Uh-oh.
Ah, crap.
Uh-oh. Ah, crap, yeah.
Literally.
A loose sewer stack. Well, the mystery is solved. That's no more fun. There goes our conspiracy theory, and Occam's razor wins again.
Unless it was intentionally left loose by the Mandabari.
There you go. Or Galen.
Yep.
No, they probably they just ran out of the glue for the PVC pipe at that point and didn't get the joint stuck together very well, and kaboosh.
Kaboosh.
Well, he's like, here it is. It's a loose pipe. No, there's no way. No, I'm looking at it. I'm looking right. Crack.
Yeah. If you know it's a loose pipe, are you really going to give it that big of a push?
But it kind of goes back to the, like you said, Jim Occam's razor.
Yeah.
Could it just be a leaky, smelly waste pipe?
Yeah.
No, there's just no way.
No.
That's what it was. The source of the swamp gas or whatever.
I sure hope the inspector that was looking for it gets assigned to fixing it, because it sure wasn't that hard to find for Gideon when he was looking.
Well, that guy was, lurking around tight-fitting tunnels and things, and here this was just like in a big open area with a ladder going past it or something. Mm-hmm. So let's not look in the obvious spots. I'll crawl for hours through tunnels with his odd-looking flashlight.
Yeah, but it's kind of interesting how they have a waste management pipe out in the open like that.
Yeah. It's in the script.
Yeah, well, it serves served its purpose. Mm-hmm. It completely gave away their ambush that they were setting up. though the way Gideon puts it, no one's killing anyone.
Yep.
And like you said, he just wants them off, pack them off the ship.
Yeah, just get out of here and stop, because he's had enough of this.
Yep. Though, and we kind of skipped over something in that coffee conversation about, things missing in space. Gideon's thing that he misses most is wind.
Yeah.
And at the end of this little incident, he notices that there is a natural wind in the transport tubes.
Yeah.
I guess those tubes dashing back and forth creates an air current.
Mm-hmm. Apparently.
And did anyone notice she was actually wearing Scully-style platform.
Yeah, I caught that.
Heels, yep.
Yeah, she walks away.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, remember, she was incredibly short. How tall is Gillian Anderson?
I don't know. I've never met her. I didn't get a chance to measure her.
But, yeah, I know one of the things that was particularly noted, she's a short one.
The interweb says 5'3".
5'3", right. And their final conversation as they're being carted off. Play it, Jim.
He's all charged up. You can leave whenever you want.
Thank you.
Don't thank me. Just go.
We're not done with each other yet. You know that.
We will tell others what we've seen.
Without proof, who's going to believe you?
It doesn't matter if they believe us. Sooner or later, the truth's going to come out. The truth is
out of fashion.
The truth is out
of fashion.
Not out there, out of fashion.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
Oh gosh, yep.
They did well. The actors did really well with that. That was cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, everyone did. Everyone did well in that.
Now we find the end of another conspiracy.
Yes, speaking about the truth being out there. Well, what led into it was discovering that the reason they didn't detect the weapon is because it's not a weapon. It's a fake.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, or I think they said it was uncharged. But fake or a real weapon that had no capability, they reasonably explained how that would get through the scan, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth.
Great.
So what does that have to do with us?
About 200 years ago, we first picked up communications from other worlds. We kept the specifics quiet for the reasons I told you before. But then it hit us. Aliens, or outsiders, as my people call your kind, were the perfect scapegoats for our internal problems.
Then the sightings, the evidence, it was all created by you. You set us up.
I assure you it was nothing personal. We chose a race at random. It happened to be yours. Once we decided which race to use, we used it to create a consistent field to the sightings, which we staged and then adamantly denied afterwards.
The more you make a big deal out of denying something, the more people think it must be true.
Exactly. Once we created this conspiracy, we could relax. When the budget is cut, why, it must be the aliens. When something goes wrong, it's those damned outsiders again. You pulled all the strings. We are just innocent puppets forced to obey. Since they can't get to you, and we're not to blame, well, we haven't had a single civil war since we instituted this new policy. Not a one.
Then why go after Dukani?
Conspiracy needs true believers out to unmask it, and true believers need to feel persecuted. We don't want him dead. We need him alive to feed the fire, keep alive the story that all our problems are being caused by aliens. That's what led us here. Lately, he's been feeling frustrated. Nothing ever leads anywhere. So we let him get this far, and we're about to stage an event that would revive his interest.
What we intercepted is distress signals.
Precisely. We never imagined we'd run into the real thing, but it worked beautifully. Now, he's even more convinced we're working together. You've done us a great service. Well, I must be going. My work is done. One thing I must say. In order to create the illusion of interference by your race, I had to study your culture very carefully. It has much to commend it. Pizza. Ice cream. It's all become quite addictive.
And yes, listeners, that was a Zippo you heard going flick.
Yeah.
Oh. And there's the Siggy.
Yeah. Good night, nurse.
Good way to end it, huh?
Yep.
Yeah. See, I told you earlier, I said, wait for it.
Yeah, wait for it. It was worth the wait.
Yeah.
It was worth the wait. I will say this. At this point, I made the comment. I made the comment that, okay, if I was Gideon, I'd be honked off enough that I'd go pay the world a visit. And damn it all, is that not exactly what he decided to do?
Yes, he did.
Oh gosh. So all right, he's gonna make sure the truth is out there, right? Yes.
Oh, yeah. Blow the cover off the Illuminati. They're going to love that, right?
Yep.
Only these guys don't seem as powerful as the X-File guys do.
Go ahead. This will be our last clip of the night on how they end it.
Probes away, sir.
Good. That should cause quite a stir when they find out what's really been going on.
But can I ask? Why?
Maybe because this whole thing offends my sense of honesty. Maybe because sooner or later we'll have official contact with these people, and I don't want Earth being blamed for something that we didn't do. But mainly, I don't like being played with, used, or manipulated, and this should communicate that lesson very clearly.
There are probably some who'll say that by doing this, we're interfering with their culture.
Probably. Screw them.
We let the truth back into the room, Lieutenant, and the truth can take care of itself. Com is yours. Jump back to hyperspace. Continue on course to the next target.
Aye, sir. And where will you be?
I'm going where I can feel the wind on my face for a while.
Obviously, the Earth Alliance has nothing even closely related to a prime directive.
Yeah.
Screw them.
Yeah. Screw them.
Yeah, well, that's a little payback, you know.
Yeah.
What's the phrase he uses? This will cause quite a stir.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What are we stirring?
Yeah. In a way, he's keeping his promise to Dukani, though.
Mm-hmm.
He promised he would help him if there really was something, he would help him get the truth out there, so.
Yeah.
Sort of saturated their planet with, you know, it looked like the balloon type bouncy reentry systems that were used to land things on Mars.
Yeah, it does, mm-hmm. actually. They do.
So, yep.
So this was the, I mentioned earlier, there's actually kind of a dark message here, and this is where it comes out, and it harkens mm-hmm. back to, something that's about mid-episode. So, you know what? The behind the humor and, you know, lightness, I guess, of this is we're watching a government pacify its people by creating addictions. They attribute it to pizza and ice cream. Create a crisis, the interference of aliens. You know, they say that. Uh-huh. Talk about. Then when we mess up or do things with the budget or something goes wrong, we let the conspiracy take over that it's alien interference.
Right.
This illusion of, it's an illusion of interference. Like you said, oh, we didn't really think we'd run into you guys. But you end up with a pacified people who become very reliant on
mm-hmm.
the story the government tells them. But the end is, which you could argue is a good thing. What did he say in the end? But there's been no civil wars since we've pacified the population.
Right.
And it's a kind of a light-hearted or tongue-in-cheek little dark commentary about ends justifying means, things like that.
Wow.
But I thought that was interesting how that kind of creeps in starting half or maybe two-thirds of the way through the episode. What was the phrase that came up? He's talking about the denial of the story of the mm-hmm. alien interference serves a purpose. When he's being asked, Gideon's asking Cancer Man there, right? Well, why are you doing this? And he says, well, the denial serves a purpose. That'll take too long to explain. Which is exactly what they're doing to their people, right? We're right. not going to explain our behavior. We're just going to give them these lies and let them eat ice cream and eat pizza, which he calls addictions. And so I just thought that was a strange, to me, that's classic, shrouded in a really funny and a lighthearted episode. That's kind of a classic use of science fiction, right?
Yeah.
Make social commentary in a way that doesn't get in people's faces.
Yep.
You know, no doubt when he says, well, that's going to stir the pot at the end, right? Matheson says, you drop these probes, it's going to stir the pot. Well, what's the pot being stirred? According to Cancer Man, it'll probably reignite civil wars. That's actually not too light.
That's not too light right there. Yeah, because that's the first thing to come to mind. It's like, okay, they might not have had a civil war in 200 years, but they're about to have a nasty one now.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so, because if these government people that are putting these little conspiracy things out there for the population to consume, they're going to be able to turn this around and twist it and even create more conspiracy with it.
Right. I mean, proof becomes the proof of what they've been saying all along.
Yeah. So you're either going, you know, you could go one way. You could say, okay, well, they're going to now figure out what the truth actually is, or it's going to just fuel the fire.
But the underlying theme of keeping people in their place, or pacification, or whatever you want to call it, is still there. It just became convenient that there's actually going to be alien interference where they were lying about alien interference.
Yeah.
But I said, I don't know if that was even the point of the episode. I got to believe, because of the way it was delivered, it was intended to be some sort of a point, but clearly, you know, not delivered even in a normal, you know, air quote, normal, serious, again, an air quote, in a normal episode, Straczynski chose a really lighthearted, you know, parody or homage to X-Files to give us a little bit of laugh and give us some fun. But what's being joked about at the core of the episode is actually kind of a dark thing.
Yeah, well, and, you know, we're laughing at ourselves because you take JFK. I have read hours and hours and hours, hundreds of hours of books about that, all kinds of different theories and ideas and scientific proof here and scientific proof there and everything else. And, you know, you take all these Kennedy books and you lay them end to end, and they're not going to reach a conclusion.
Yeah.
And, you know, so what it boils down to, once again, is Occam's razor. And the most logical explanation is probably the right one.
Right. Mm-hmm. Hey, and reinforcing what you said about the, you know, the truth actually being present now could reinforce the bad behavior of the rulers there. But the people don't really know what the truth is at this point. They don't know what's been true or a lie, and so we're back to kind of the theme of the X-Files, right?
Yeah.
Well, you have at some point you have to believe, and the truth is out there. But do we ever really learn what? I thought it was a cool episode.
I think if you're about to ask if we learn what the truth is, yeah, I think we do. Do we learn what the outcome of the truth is? Not at all.
No, not really.
No.
And yeah. Oh, and did you notice a little more X-File music at the end there?
Yeah, a little bit.
Heck yeah.
And yeah, I thought this was, this was, you know, on the one hand, yeah, it was a filler episode, sure. But it was, it's probably my favorite episode of the series. And it was a lot of fun, and it very quickly became one of my favorite episodes of the franchise.
Well,
it snuck up on me how good it was.
Yeah, if you take it for what it is, which is a parody, which is supposed to be a light episode, you know, let's face it, we have a heavy theme here. We have millions of people that have a very short time to survive, and we have to find some way to fix this. And it's time to throw something a little lighter in there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you take it for what it is. It's fun. Okay. Is it something that I want to watch once a week? No. Because I think once you've seen this episode, you can't come back to it.
Right.
You know, unless you're going to dig in and look for little things like the Y in the window and all those little things.
No, after one look, it would be stale.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's the right word, but that's the one I'm going to use.
You know, maybe watch it and wait a couple years and watch it again later on. Who knows? But, yeah. So, on our next very exciting episode, which happens to be our last Crusade episode.
But not the last episode of the Babylon Project podcast.
No. We have an episode that is called Each Night I Dream of Home. And former Babylon 5 Medical Chief of Staff Dr. Stephen Franklin comes to the Excalibur to oversee an experiment that may strike a blow against the Drak plague. The Drak strike a blow of their own, launching an attack after the experimentation gets underway.
Oh.
So, yes.
Those party poopers.
Yeah, so not only do we have the Drak plague, we got another. They have another trick up their sleeve. We get a guest starring role by Richard Biggs.
Yeah, this must be one of his last appearances then.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
If not his last.
Yeah. Oh, in the last episode, we don't get to see Max, Galen, or Darina.
Thanks, Suits.
Yeah. So, I guess that only leaves one thing.
Does it?
Yep.
Was
there any boom today?
You know, in all honesty, I would say no boom today.
No boom today?
There was certainly some truth, but no boom.
Okay, and what about tomorrow? Will there be boom tomorrow?
Of course.
I'm confident there's going to be boom tomorrow.
Why is that, JP?
Because there's always boom tomorrow.
Always boom tomorrow.
Always.
Always. Good night, everybody.
Say goodnight, JP.
Good night, JP.
So long, everyone. And remember, trust no one.
Podcast terminated.
Thank you for listening to the Babylon Project podcast. You can email Raul and Jim at thebabylonprojectpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook at the Babylon Project Podcast. On the internet, we are at babylonprojectpodcast.wordpress.com. To subscribe to the podcast, you can find us on iTunes, or you can subscribe to the RSS feed on the webpage.